Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Young love. Even before Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet, teens were searching for it and parents were dreading it. Today, psychologist Wes Crenshaw joins us for a discussion about youthful romance. We'll talk about the appropriate age to start dating, how to handle objections to a teen's love interest, and the best time to have the talk. As moms and dads, should we use the same rules that were in play when we dated, or do different times call for different measures? Plus, as much as we're concerned about our kids starting a relationship, are we prepared to support them when it ends? Happy Valentine's Day, Mom and Dad. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. What's awkward, sometimes cute, confusing, and did I say awkward? Answer, teen dating. Today, a conversation with psychologist Wes Crenshaw about how teen dating is different today than when we were kids, sexuality, and for parents, what is our role when it comes to the love lives of our kids? Dr. Wes Crenshaw is out with a pair of books titled Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. He specializes in working with adolescents and their families in his private practice in Lawrence, and he writes the Double Take Advice column in the Lawrence Journal World. And Wes, good to have you back. Good morning.
I can tell you're a parent by that introduction.
Is it that obvious?
Did you say awkward?
Yeah, awkward. Yeah, absolutely.
Right on the money.
Well, you say that teen dating is organized differently now than it was in the past, Wes. How so?
Well, they don't even use the word dating anymore, and there's probably a pretty good reason for that. The main terms used are talking to and hooking up and hanging out. And even those do not have clearly defined meanings.
What's wrong with dating?
That is so 1994. It just is not cool. But those terms are kind of important because when your teenager is saying, yeah, I'm talking to so-and-so, you may think and – you know, they are visiting with someone in a thoughtful manner. This means they are expressing a romantic interest in that person and perhaps hoping that will be reciprocated.
Mm-hmm. But it's very different today than it was, you're saying, in 20 years ago.
Well, very much so. And the other difference is that and this is kind of the big one. There are two sort of schools of thought amongst teenagers and young adults, and they're very dichotomous. One is the hookup culture, and hookup is defined as anything from making out to the big one, as we refer. And then the other group, and these are people who see sexuality as fairly recreational and engage in it without benefit of relationship. And that tends to be the dominant movement right now. The other group are what I call the radical monogamists, and these are the ones who are sort of a reaction to that. And you know, as recently as yesterday, I saw a couple of different couples who are who've been together for 5 years now, and they're 19.
Wow!
So
wow.
These are folks who really militate against that hookup culture and really try to form what are kind of little marriages when they're very young.
Well, what's happened in our culture the last 20 years ago that has sort of led to this moment? Like, what's going on out there that has brought us to a very different place here?
Well, there are two or three things. You cannot ignore the internet in anything you discuss nowadays. And the internet has brought people's sexuality right to the forefront. You can click two clicks and come up with anything you can imagine and quite a few things you cannot imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And that has made the conversation around sex much more free. And in 19 years of practice, I have watched that arc change to where it was a little uncomfortable to talk to teenagers about sex in the mid-90s, and they won't shut up about it. Right now, it is very okay for them to talk to their therapist very openly about sexual issues. Well, that translates to a much greater freedom of behavior too. And as always, the one thing that hasn't changed in our lives is that young women are the ones who tend to drive the direction of dating culture for good or ill. And they can, that their openness about this and their sort of seizing their sexuality, their taking control of that has actually changed the dating marketplace very dramatically.
Well, this notion of seizing one's sexuality, we're seeing more of that earlier now. Are things more sped up today than it was 20 years ago, Wes, as a general rule?
You know, I don't know that the statistics are quite proving that out now. It's a little hard to tell. My clinical experience suggests that, yes, we are seeing earlier sexual contact, and we're seeing a more, as I said, a more sexual contact that's not in the context of a relationship earlier in kids' lives.
You really emphasize this idea of the long-term importance of teenage dating relationships in your book. Why do you see this as being as crucial as you do?
Everything kids do now is practice, and that's been always correct, always true. But kids are practicing for the future. So if you are 15 or 16 and you are practicing being in an abusive relationship, it is going to be that much more difficult to change that behavior as you come into adulthood. If you're not considering your sexual behavior as a part of love and as part of a relationship at 15 or 16, it's likely that's how you're going to move into adulthood. So people who have some lost notion of puppy love and it's, you know, it's not really that important and they'll grow up and change, these are the formative years. That's why we go to high school at this point to learn how to be as adults, and the same is true with love and sex.
So if you get started down the wrong path now, you're going to be down the wrong path, what, maybe 5-10 years from now?
It's always, that sounds terribly apocalyptic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's just say I have an awful lot of young people I've worked with in the last 10 years who are trying to sort of recover from unwise behaviors in adolescence before they really realized what they were doing. So you can get the change made, but easier to figure it out on the front end.
Visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence about teen dating. If you want to join our conversation here, I'm sure we'll have lots of questions here on this Valentine's Day about this very important topic. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Our email address is UpToDate at KCUR.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Well, Wes, you have a rule, and the rule is that everyone needs to experience two dating behaviors as they grow up, exclusivity and exploration, in what you say is a reasonable balance between the two. You pitch that idea. Why?
Well, that's part of that learning and growing, that if you are just a radical monogamist, and I have to admit, you know, I'm a big fan of love. I like this day. I like people who are in a relationship as young people. So that seduces me too into some level of joy. But that is not sufficient. You can't it's risky to marry your partner at 14 and hang in there for 5 or 6 or 7 years, or 19 or 21. There's a lot of having to get to know people. And I know this just seems really obvious, but I have to explain this 7 times, 10 times a week. Dating, the purpose thereof, whatever you call it, dating, the purpose thereof is to find out who you do and don't match with. And in the radical monogamy side, dating is how to find a partner and stick. Mm-hmm. And that, and in the hookup culture, one isn't thinking about a partner. And so dating has a purpose, and I'm trying to single-handedly bring it back from the grave.
Well, can we quantify how much of getting together these days is quote, hooking up versus radical monogamy versus some sort of healthy sense of dating around like it used to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. And dating around is not the same as hooking up. One of the things we do see, I should say, is that sexual involvement on average right now comes before the relationship begins to develop. I realize how disturbing that may seem, but it is absolutely the common behavior. And this, again, is because young women are tending to set the standard differently than where they did, and probably will get all sorts of angry calls about that. I'm not making a negative or pejorative comment there. It's just young women still drive the dating pool.
And that notion of sex coming before the rest of the relationship, in a sense, that's happening why?
You're really testing my bachelor's degree in sociology on this one. This comes down to how the dating marketplace exists. And this will sound a little crass, but dating really is a pool in a marketplace. And young women have had a hard time in the last 10 years as they take control of their sexuality, keeping their value in that pool sufficient. So young men don't have to try very hard right now to sleep with a girl. And so this – the more girls – I just had this discussion with a young woman yesterday. Girls who want to hold back and say, you know what? You got to work at it here for a while, get undercut by what we call in my office the strike breakers, that there are others who are willing to be freer with their sexual
– And so guys gravitate
– You got it.
– towards that.
And this is incredibly irritating. Because then young women have a hard that don't want to jump into this quite so quickly, have a hard time competing in the dating pool. So they go to their parents and they go, you know, I'm not getting dates and so on. And the parent says, well, if he cares about you, he'll wait. And then that's such a beautiful idea, and it just simply isn't true. When guys don't have to wait, they tend to be impatient and they don't.
But is that really all that different than when I was in high school? Because when I was in high school, you always sort of knew – you know, in my case, which girls were the ones who were sort of willing to go there more quickly than others, and you sort of there was that stratification in the sociology, I guess, of the girl pool. You knew who was going there quickly and who wasn't, and some people, I guess myself included, weren't really drawn to the quicker thing necessarily. That really wasn't where I was at.
Well, as the great philosopher Meatloaf said in his
okay, let's bring this down to earth a little
epic,
more quickly.
Song.
Me and my words like stratification. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In his epic song about – what was it called? I just blanked out. I had the album.
Bat Out of Hell.
Yeah, it's that album, but it's the one where he sings that he'll love her for the until the end of time so he can have sex with her. And then he – in a humorous turn in the end, his song is, I'm praying for the end of time so I can end my time with you. And what Meatloaf was speaking of in that era was that there was some expectation in general that if you wanted to sleep with a girl, you needed to have some obligation to her. And then you might regret it later, but you had to have the obligation. So that was the cultural zeitgeist. Whether that happened all the time or not, it still was how we looked at relationships. And that's kind of gone at this point.
What do you make of this idea that the world of teen dating has changed as much as Dr. West is explaining to us that it has? Again, our number 816-235-2888, our email address update@kcur.org. You know, is there – I guess this is a tough question. All parents deal with this, Wes. Is there a particular age that you think teens should begin dating? Is there a magic number or not really?
Yeah, I have my theory of this is that you sort of move into this in stages. And I think parents would do well to be sort of involved in that process all along the way. Now, teenagers, were they not in school right now, would utter an enormous groan of horror at hearing me say that. But parents, if they are active in their teen's dating life early on, will be able to set some standards and model. So I think it's fine if kids are going on group dates or have a girlfriend or boyfriend in middle school. It, first of all, it's inevitable. And so if you don't take some influence over that, it's going to happen without you. So I think this weird thing of saying you can only date when you're 16 is like bottling up the nitroglycerin and throwing it at 16. It's going to explode.
But you're suggesting that parents need to be involved in this middle school dating, be aware of it, guide it along the way. And what if you have a kid, and maybe like in my case, who doesn't want to talk about this stuff very much?
Well, there you go. If you would like to know all the secrets in your child's brain, all you need to do is log into Twitter.
Yeah.
And you don't have to follow them. You just need to follow a bunch of teenagers, and they will probably tell you an awful lot about what your kid is thinking. I've been working on this quite a bit lately, and I have a list people can click through on my website of teenagers I like to follow to see what they're thinking.
And going on Twitter, you learn what?
Well, because kids, as you pointed out, aren't, you know, necessarily going to share all their inner thoughts with their parent, the parent doesn't have the access I do on a daily basis to teenagers. I do know what they talk about. I know how they talk about it. I know what they do because we talk about it. And they're obviously comfortable in that confidential relationship sharing that. But parents don't have that. And really the fundamental dilemma of adolescence, as a 16-year-old girl once put it to me, is if I tell you what I'm doing, you're going to stop me. And if I don't tell you, you're not going to be able to help me. And that really is a dilemma. And so if you can't just tap into your kid's brain, they're probably not going to tell you the truth about everything. That's why Twitter is nice, because people are out there just getting it said.
So what do you do?
Well, you mean
help a parent out? If the child's not telling you very much, what do you do?
Learn as much about teen culture as you can. And I know two really good books people could buy on that topic.
Yeah.
And then assume your kid is more steeped in teen culture than you think they are. Too many people are so sure that their sweet Johnny and Susie are not really influenced by all this. And if you get on Twitter and hear what they're talking about and realize your kid is talking about the same things, then you will see more of what I am referring to.
Yeah, what is that about parents who say, "Oh, my son or daughter doesn't date, my son or daughter doesn't drink, my son or daughter would never do X, Y, or Z"? And a lot of times, in fact, you sort of know that's not the case.
Well, we have
even a cluckhead like me sometimes know. Mom or dad, you're wrong.
In psychology, this is referred to as the fundamental attributional bias, and my mom referred to it as my dirt is clean dirt and your dirt is dirty dirt. And so parents want to believe their kid is different, that they've raised them better, et cetera. And they, you know, forget that sometimes there's a lot of influence out there other than them.
Yeah. Okay. How should parents approach their teen's new boy or girlfriend, Wes?
With great love and affection.
Really?
The old saying, make your friends close and your enemies closer, never has applied more than it does to boy and girlfriends. There are obviously some attributes one does not want to have in a child's boyfriend or girlfriend, and that is if they're abusive or manipulative or troublesome or smoking a bunch of weed or some of those kind of things. But you will never really get to know that person or understand your young person, your teenager, in the context of relationships if you boot them out the door. Or my favorite one is clean your gun when they come over. I recommend against cleaning your gun when they come over.
You need to be open to it to begin to learn what in the world's going on.
That's exactly right. And inviting them over will annoy your kid because they would prefer not to have your oversight probably, but it will in the long run help a great deal.
Well, let me get our listeners to chime in on how old do you think your teen has to be in order to go out on a date or to begin dating? 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. When parents really object to a teen boy or girlfriend, what should they do? What should happen next?
One first needs to sit down either with their spouse or with a trusted adult if they're a single parent and do a gut check and really decide, am I upset about this for important reasons? Picking one's battles in the teenage dating years is absolutely crucial. And so if, for example, the kid has a lip piercing, well, that's par for the course at this point. And having a lip piercing doesn't say anything about the person's heart. A lot of people without lip piercings are terribly naughty. And a lot of people with lip piercings are just right fine people. So you have to really decide, what is my hang-up here? And the hang-ups need to be things that bring harm or could bring harm to your child. Is this person involved in criminal activity? Awful lot of young people out there on probation right now wanting to date your daughter. That's probably a concern. Is there drug use? Is there an abusive, controlling kind of relationship? We see a lot more of this sort of emotional and physical dating violence.
And can a parent sort of ascertain if that's going on or not, Wes? I mean, a lot of times, how are they going to know exactly what the dynamic is between boyfriend and girlfriend?
Having a good relationship with your kid to start out with from early on and talking about relationship issues from when they're 7, 8, 9 years old and they start really getting interested in other people in relationships. And I don't just mean sexual relationships. I mean just friendships. That's when kids really start thinking about themselves in a social environment. Mm-hmm. And talking with them from that point forward will begin to build a platform for that. So you will have a little better sense of feedback. But again, the fundamental teenage dilemma, they probably aren't going to say, my boyfriend is controlling and manipulating me. You will begin to see that because if the boy, for example, I certainly see it go the other way, by the way, in genders. If the boy doesn't want to come over to your house and spend any time, if he doesn't want to go
on a good sign.
Little trip with you and the family, that's not a good sign. And so people who isolate, the first entry point into an abusive relationship is isolation, where people want to get the person away from social support. And if you see that coming, you probably ought to get worried.
Teen dating is our topic here. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, author of Dear Dr. Wes. Those books are, again, our number 816-235-2888. I should point out that Dr. Wes will be at Rainy Day Books in Faraway again for a book signing after the show. You can join him at Rainy Day Books in Faraway right after the show and meet him in person and maybe perhaps talk with him as well. Again, our number 816-235-2888. And let's go to some calls now. And Kathy from Kansas City, Kansas. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
So this is, hi. I've raised my kids, and I had a girl who told me everything and a boy who told me nothing. They're wonderful now. So here's the deal, Steve. This is my advice.
Yes.
And I bet you already do this. Be at all as many school functions as you can. Be a part of that school. And you or your wife, be a part of, be on good standing and open to the young ladies in that school. Because I never knew who my son was talking to until someone would come up and go, Mrs. Hill, oh, how do you think about Emily and your son? And I'd be like, tell me more. And they did. They told me everything. So, and I wasn't being sneaky. It was just being one of the parents who they liked, and they just told you stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think, Kathy, my son would be mortified if I showed up at middle school to hang out for a day.
Oh, no.
Or
no,
at a dance or whatever.
Right. No, not the dances. The games, the games, the concerts.
Gotcha.
I totally agree with you.
And, that's great,
and
Kathy.
This is where I get my sort of Twitter idea from, is really that same idea, that the social network now is international. Several of the kids I have on my Twitter list are not even from the United States. And so this is the same idea. Listen in, see what kids are doing. And frankly, if you get the right Twitter feed, you'll find out what your kid is doing because some of his friends are Twittering. Tweeting.
Thank you, and good luck.
Yeah, Kathy, thank you for the good call. Dave from Overland Park. Dave, you're on with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I've got two things. I was raised as the child of a flower child, so when I was a kid, my house was always the house block party place, you know, where all the kids came to swim in the pool and all that fun stuff. Well, that means I've raised my daughter the same way.
It's good.
So I know all of her friends. They all come and hang here, and they all whine to me about how ununderstanding their parents are and how cool I am, and isn't this great. And that's cool, too. But the thing that I really wanted to get at was that back when my daughter was 8, and she's about to turn 17 now, she first started talking about boys, and I told her before anybody puts her in a car and takes her out anywhere, I want a DNA sample.
Well, you want to be what, Dave?
A DNA sample.
Oh.
This started out as a joke, okay? Mm-hmm. But it got repeated often enough that she started to believe it as she was growing up. And when she got to dating age, I said, you know what? This isn't a half bad idea. So right now, I have a half a dozen Ziploc baggies in my freezer with little Q-tips and their names and birth dates with Sharpie markers on the bags. And if he's an honest kid, he doesn't care and he understands. If he's not an honest kid, he either doesn't come back or it keeps him honest. And you'd be amazed when she started telling the boys about this. You'd be amazed how many guys just never showed up at the door.
This is the theory of the polygraph. You understand?
Wow.
Polygraphs are more effective in the person's worry about taking it than the actual taking it.
How do most guys react to your request, Dave?
Well, like I said, if he's an honest kid, he understands and he doesn't mind doing it. if he's one of the ones that's going to be a problem in the first place, she tells him at school before, you know, they ever go anywhere, you got to meet my dad first, and this is what he's going to say. And like I said, you'd be amazed how many of them never get to the front door.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Wes?
Well, I think it's unique, but the overriding part is great because this is him taking an active role in the daughter's dating, and the daughter appreciating that. She says, you know, you got to meet my dad first. And that's such an old-fashioned tradition, and I am completely down with it. I think it is great.
Well, Dave, thanks for the good call. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day. Let's go to Victoria from Lenexa. Victoria, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hey, Steve. It's Victoria.
Hey,
how
Victoria. Good.
Hey, I've got one for you.
Yes.
Okay. We have a high school daughter dating a college boy. They met, or they were friends. She was a freshman. He was a senior last year. And now he's gone to college, so he's a freshman. She's a sophomore in high school. And I was hoping, you know, a year or a semester of fraternity and football games would kind of break up the situation. But they still are together. They like each other. We like him. He's very nice. He comes over. He's part of, you know, he hangs out with our family. We've had all the talks with her and even with him, too. We kind of treat him like part of the family. And really the only objection is that he's older. So any advice on that?
You write about this in your books, Wes.
I sure do.
Mm-hmm.
Both books, we talk about this and all of the issues you just hit because there are several of them. My rule on this is the older they are, the more perfect they have to be. And you describe I'm glad that amuses Steve and he doesn't think that I'm just hooking his daughter up with an older guy. That is the best rule because if the kid comes – and you got this covered because you're saying that this is a pretty good guy. So you got it covered and I wouldn't worry about the age. But if your daughter comes home and she says I'm 18 or 17 and I'm dating a 22-year-old and you say, OMG, and she says, oh, don't worry, he doesn't act like he's 24, run screaming. The last thing you want to know is some 22-year-old fits beautifully with the, you know, sophomore class at high school. But if instead he admires her for her maturity and her lack of fitting with her peer group because she is so mature, that often works out great. And as truth be known, I have frequently recommended that, you know, 17, 16-year-old girls date somebody 2 or 3 years older who is that more perfect kind of guy. Certainly not all 19-year-olds fit that, but a lot of girls don't feel they fit very well in high school.
So you're suggesting that parents have to spend some time in this situation, really eyeball the situation and see what's going on. And it doesn't strike me as that unusual in Victoria's case because so many times you hear and read and see that teenage girls are more advanced than the boys by a year or two or something like that.
And that is exactly correct. The developmental research supports that. What is really weird, though, I'll throw a curve in at you, is of late we have begun to see more college-age girls dating late high school boys. And I cannot square that circle to save me because it doesn't fit a developmental model, and rarely are those couples very well matched. So that's the odd new trend.
Oh. Well, this guy is studying petrochemical engineering, so we like him. He's on the right track.
What colors are they going to have at their wedding?
No. Okay.
Victoria, I'm glad you called. Good to hear from you.
See you, Steve. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. We have an email here from Stacy who asks, Wes, what are the two books your guests would recommend for parents of teens? Because you just said a few minutes ago there were two books. Go ahead
Steve
and plug them,
Wes. Got that
Wes.
Joke.
Yeah.
Those two books would be Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens, and Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens.
One book geared for parents, one book geared to the teens themselves.
And the awesome, cool thing about this is that half the material in each book was written by teenagers. They are co-authors of our Double Take column in Lawrence, and so you get both my sage advice over 19 years of doing therapy and a teenager's wisdom, and sadly the teenager's wisdom often is better than mine. So you can read them and see what you think.
Let's go to Ken here from Lee Summit who wants to talk about the older boy situation. Ken, you're on the program. Good morning. Are you there, Ken?
Ken's gone. Let's do this. Let's take a break, Wes. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about teen dating. We'll talk a little bit more about hooking up and Wes's rule in his book about the 90-day rule and what's that all about. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's program on the additives in our food, you can find it at kcur.org. Tomorrow, look at the history and current practices of teaching evolution in our schools. This hour, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw about teen dating, all aspects of it. He'll be appearing at Rainy Day Books today after the show, Rainy Day Books over in Fairway. You can drop by and visit with Dr. Wes. If you want to join our conversation now, you can do so, 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or again, go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We have an email here from Heidi West. My advice, being too strict can backfire, and I may tend to overcompensate when parenting my kids by being too gray with boundary lines, but they do talk to me more than I talk to my parents about their personal lives.
Right, which then puts you in the fundamental dilemma of parenting, which is how much do I push and how much do I hold my child? And the best parent is the one who is the most influential. It's not the authoritarian. It's the authoritative parent. And that comes from what we call in the biz referent power, the idea that somebody wants to be like you. And so if you can help your kids to want to aspire to be more like you and you hold yourself out in a positive way, that'll work. And that sounds like maybe what you're doing. But be aware, the farther they get up through adolescence, the more you're going to have to say the big N-O.
My son, Bill, writes us this email. My son is a junior in high school, dating a girl who lives on the East Coast. He wants her to go with us to tour colleges. How would you handle this?
So their long-distance relationship, and she wants to join them on the trip, I would have her go along. I'm a big fan of that. It makes for a better experience for the young person, and you will get to know her as traveling companions always do. I think it's a great idea.
You recommend that even on vacations? That comes up. You think it's a good thing to do?
I do, and I have this habit of interviewing people when I go on vacation. I can't control myself. It just happened at the City Museum the other day in St. Louis. And I like to find out about people who aren't in my office for the purpose of therapy. And I have run into a number of families who do this and find it very meaningful. I recommend it.
And the young girl or boy stays where when it's an overnight situation?
Yeah, you got to work those things out. I'm not ever a believer that you should shack your kids up together in a motel. That's they figure out how to get that done. You don't need to help them. You can have a sleeping arrangement in modern motels and hotels that will take care of that problem.
816-235-2888. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest. Let's go to Chad from Gladstone. Chad, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Well, thanks.
Good.
Dr. Wes, I'm a father of four girls.
Oh, my goodness. If you'll come out to Rainy Day today, I will just give you a hug.
Thank you. They are 16, 14, 12, and 7.
And a free book.
And we, my wife and I, we have pretty frank discussions about dating and boys in general. And as the lone male person in my house, I try to be pretty frank with the girls about, even though young men may not be able to understand or control what it is they want, really, they kind of have a driving force in their minds of really wanting one thing from a girl when they start to express interest in it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of led to me being a little overbearing about who my daughters might be dating. So my question to you is, how can I help temper that so that they don't feel afraid to bring a boy home for me to meet?
Yeah, that's the dilemma again. How much do you hold and how much do you push? And I'm, you know, I get the luxury of just being more blunt with kids than parents have to be, and kids like that with me. And I just say, look, Every boy wants to have sex with you, the nice ones, the bad ones, all of them. They want to have sex with
right.
you. That is understandable.
Right.
And your job is to figure out where you stand on that and stick. And that, and I would go that route with your girls. You cannot be out in the back seat of a car or wherever and control that. The best you can do is to give her a good ethic for herself and her relationships. And you're off to a good start with that if you're having those kind of conversations.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. Yeah, we like to hear that. We worried for a while because our oldest is very involved in lots of extracurricular activities, and she hasn't been dating a lot. So we also kind of worried that this lack of dating in high school or hooking up or going out may lead to a explosion once she gets to college.
Yeah, it's a valid concern, and life has to be in balance. Everybody thinks it's super neat if you can just get your kids enrolled in enough activities, they won't ever meet a boy.
No.
that leads to the problem you're talking about. And I do work with
that's a legitimate this. Problem.
Sure it is. Kids, if you don't learn during this phase, you're going to have a harder time adapting later on in young adulthood, and you may make some poor decisions at that point that may be more serious at that time.
Okay. So, yeah, we should just continue being open and then continue trying to just maybe nudging her along to see who it is she wants to go out with.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to say something that you can just think about. I'm a little unclear why we're having a debate in this country about birth control and contraception.
I think
tomorrow we're going to start to debate gravity. And I can't figure this out. But let me say between you and I and the listening audience, my policy in birth control is it's rarely too early for teens and often too late. So with that many girls around, it's worth thinking about.
Hmm. Yeah, and I understand that is something that's – it's a delicate situation around us because the discussions of birth control lead to why do I need birth control, and then I typically hand that over to mom. But that conversation has come up, and it's something that I agree with you with, that I think it should be something open and frank and understood why birth control is out there.
Well, you're going to have fewer grandchildren before you're ready, and I'm impressed with your thinking.
I hope you're correct, sir.
Chad, best of luck to you.
I'll be fine with that. All right, thanks for your time, gentlemen.
Thanks for the phone call.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Bye-bye. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. We have an interesting email here from Sergio. He writes, I recently found out my 15-year-old niece and her friends video chat with some guys from Switzerland. I don't think her parents know about it. Should it be of concern? Should I tell my sister?
You know, nobody has ever gotten pregnant over video chat. And I think that people are often safer in long-distance relationships like this that they have with people all over the world than they're going to be with somebody that's down the road and can actually do them some harm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people are we're getting a little better about this, but people are overly worried about this. You know, the online predator is going to somehow come through your computer and get your kid. The Center for Missing and Exploited Children states this is not a concern. The concern is what kids are putting up on the internet. And someday we'll do a show on teen technology, and I will tell you what they're putting up on the internet. And that's much more of a risk for kids than anything they're going to get elsewhere. So if your kids are behaving and know how to behave in an ethical manner online, that's probably not going to be a problem, or the niece in this case.
Wes, this notion, though, of long-distance dating, you point out that teens are doing more of that.
Yeah.
And I guess given the internet, that's not a huge surprise. The concern there for parents should be what?
Well, in some ways it's a luxury because, again, you don't have this person right there in an overtly sexual, physically sexual relationship very much. But at the same time, the problem with over internet dating, long-distance dating, is you don't really get to know the person in a live world. And so you'll go out and visit the person. I've got a couple of young people going to visit their long-distance boyfriends in spring break. And oh, my Lord, it's romantic. It's like Roman holiday. You meet up and you have this great love. That's not for real.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to be able to be in the same space with a person, in the same neighborhood, in the same school. So the risk there is you get all the romance and none of the reality.
Okay. Back to some calls. Lisa from Prairie Village. Lisa, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks very much for the show today. I have a great 12-year-old son who recently told me he asked his girlfriend on a date. And when I asked him what that meant, he said, well, I don't know. I said, oh, he has a long way ahead of him. But I guess my question is, what are sort of appropriate activities for middle schoolers in terms of, you know, wanting to support his interest and acknowledging that this is the reality of his life, but also not really wanting to jump off this deep end too soon. And I know in a few years I will be wishing that this was my worst problem.
No, I think that's very nice of you, and it goes along with what we said about trying to be active and involved. The kids are not very creative anymore about their dating. I've noticed this on the Twitter feeds that a lot of the girls are disappointed in their boyfriend's lack of knowledge about how to go on a date. And so I think those girls ought to go on strike. And I say so. But at that age, you know, a movie date, I think they can go out for a lunch and do that kind of thing. Group dates are really kind of better in that situation because mm-hmm. they're not as awkward. You don't have to think of a bunch of stuff to say.
Right.
And just activities.
And should Lisa drop them off at the lunch place and leave?
Yeah, I probably would be okay on the lunch place with that. I think the movie theater begs for maybe some more issues. But stuff like laser tag and paintball, a lot of girls like to do things like that. They're athletic and have fun with that. So think out of the box and do that kind of thing.
Good luck, Lisa.
Thanks very much.
You bet. So long. Well, speaking of Twitter, you have some Twitter tweets that you wanted to read to our audience there because it does give you a sense of how teen girls and boys think these days when it comes to teen dating.
Well, and in honor of our public radio presence, I shall delete the profanity. If you're going to follow my list, you do have to understand that the kids are speaking how they really speak. This is how they speak to me in my office, but it may be a little shocking to you. So I left those out, and I don't retweet the more profane ones, but I do have them on my list. And I like some of this. One of these – Valentine's Day has been influential the last few days on Twitter. And one girl writes, don't tell a girl you love her because she might just make the stupidest mistake in her life and believe it. Huh. Another one that I try to teach all the time that I think is right on the money is friends with benefits, which we haven't talked too much about, but it is exactly what it says it is. Friends with benefits in reality is telling you that you're good enough to have sex with but not good enough to invest feelings in.
Well, that's interesting.
Pretty smart for 15. I like it.
That's a tweet you're reading.
I am reading a tweet that I've collected.
They get it.
Yeah. And this girl is about 15 by my estimate. I like this one. Good advice for Valentine's Day. Be the girl you want your daughter to be. Be the girl you want your son to date. Be classy, anything but trashy. Hmm. A little rhyme going on in there.
Yeah.
And I particularly – this is – in our current reality, kids have a harder time getting out of relationships than they have getting into them. And they really struggle to break up when they're in this kind of radical monogamy. And one girl writes, relationships are like glass. Sometimes it's better to leave them broken than try to hurt yourself putting it back together.
Wow.
I've used this
one.
Profound. I know. It really is. And I've been using this material with clients. And we talk a lot about why bad boys and good girls get together in our book. This girl writes, every boy wants a good girl to be bad just for him. And every girl wants a bad boy to be good just for her.
Mm.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah. It's implying that that's a very difficult switch to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And girl, we talk a lot. I tweeted quite a bit yesterday too about this. We talk a lot about that people want to change but not very much. Mm-hmm. And so you probably want to pick somebody who doesn't need a lot of assembly. And then my last one here that I like, this I think this is like a poem, and I direct messaged Sandra today, told her I was going to read this. And there are things called hashtags on Twitter. And so these are what teachers would call stems or idea starters. And I think teachers ought to get into this because these are some good idea starters. And this one is, I want someone who will. And I'm going to leave out that stem and just read what she's written over several tweets.
Mm-hmm.
I want someone who will run through sprinklers with me and have water gun fights. Take me to new places and teach me new things. Never judge me on my past mistakes. Hold a damn conversation and keep it going more than lousy 10 minutes. Gosh, Steve, how sad for us as men. Chase me when I walk away. Kiss me on the lips when I'm talking too much to shut up. Disregard how bleep I look some days and think I'm beautiful in every single way.
Mm-hmm.
Take me out on dinner dates instead of a cliche movie date. Give me piggyback rides. Buy me McDonald's whenever I want. Snort like a pig with me. Put his arms around me to show everyone else that I'm his. Help me overcome my fears and never give up on me.
Well,
I just love to follow Sandra when she's not blowing out the F-bomb.
And she's how old roughly?
I think she's about 15 or 16.
Oh, that's just terrific.
And she is a prolific Twitter.
She's got a feature in a greeting card industry too, I think.
I think she has like 10,000 tweets or something.
Wow. So. Back to some phone calls here. Kathy from Lawrence. Kathy, thanks for holding on. You're on with Dr. Wes Crenshaw.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, I'm sorry, I'm in the car, that I read Wes all the time. I wanted to offer some reassurance to the father of four girls. I meals to seven girls, and we all married wonderful men because we had a terrific dad, and everybody gets along great. And I'm the grandmother of two and the mother of two, and we two girls, and we traveled with our teenage daughters and boyfriends, and I asked an older friend what they did. She said, put everybody on rollaways, put everybody, moms and dads and everybody, in T-shirts and boxer shorts, and all sleep in the same room.
Slumber
and
party.
And it really slows down the activity, yeah.
Slumber party. That's great.
That's a good phone call, Kathy.
Thanks. The boyfriend saved one trip with rain and racquetball, so.
Oh, there you go.
Anyway, good job, Wes. We enjoy your columns.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sonia from Independence. Sonia, you're on the program.
Hi. I have got a lot of feeling out of what you just read from that girl. I feel like that, too. But anyway, I feel just like her. But anyway, I have a granddaughter that's very young, and she had a 16-year-old cousin come during the summertime and spend a couple of weeks. Anyway, the cousin is bisexual or lesbian, she says. I mean, I'm not sure, you know. I mean, I've dealt with it before. I don't know if it's a lifestyle choice, or sometimes it's choice, sometimes it's not. But anyway,
that'll be Mundy's column.
10. My little granddaughter's 10, okay, and she told me after that girl left that she was bisexual or a lesbian. And I don't know if I should tell my son and his wife. I mean, I kept to myself, but I told her, you're too young to do anything anyway. You know, she's 11 now. But even, you know, if you do, don't ever do anything that you think you might regret later. I mean, I don't know what to say to her. I don't know if I should tell her parents.
Get on our column Monday. I just turned that one in for Monday. We're going to be talking about that very issue and coming out.
I'm so worried, you know, because that girl had just been there, and I went through a lot of things when I was young of different relatives sexually molesting me and stuff, and I didn't know if that girl tried to perpetrate something on her. I asked her point blank, and I'm not afraid to ask him, boy. And I'm telling you what, if they're on the computer at my house, if I can't know your password, you cannot use my computer. I am sorry.
That'll go good on our Teen Tech Day.
Yeah.
One of the trends we see, and I'm going to say this, Mindy, in the column, and it's going to be a little uncomfortable for people, but in the under-30s generation, and particularly the under-21 right now, the idea of being gay or lesbian or straight is giving way to being attracted to an individual and being less concerned about your sexual orientation. This is very strongly growing trend amongst young women, and maybe moving in that direction with guys too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps in my lifetime, those distinctions are going to become less important, and that will make the culture wars a whole new thing.
We haven't really talked about when you recommended that parents have the talk with their teens about sex.
I do not recommend they have the talk with teens. I recommend they start when they're about six.
Mm-hmm. Seriously.
One of the most beautiful moments of my life, really, was when my goddaughter Chelsea, who is now coming to KU as a junior in the fall, brought her boyfriend up to visit when she was 16. And we went out to eat barbecue in Lawrence. And she sat at the table with me and the boyfriend and said, "Let's talk about birth control." And the boy looked like he was going to throw up.
Wow.
And I didn't. I was like, that's nice. Now, why was that okay? Because she and I had this discussion. Her dad was not in her life, and so I've been a lot in her life. And we've had this discussion since she was 5 or 6 years old. So that was like pass the sauce. It was not a big thing. And the boy got through the discussion, and I'm proud of how she handled that. That's what you're shooting for. If I had waited till we were eating barbecue to say, so it's time for the discussion. That wouldn't have gone very well.
Right.
Has to be that comfortable. And people can do this, Steve. They get in front of the mirror and talk to yourself about sex, and you'll get over the fear eventually. And then you can go forward and do that with your kid.
Well, that's good advice. Well, Dr. West, it's always good to have you here. Thanks so much for your time today.
It's great to be here. I love the show.
And if people have more questions, they can see Dr. Wes Crenshaw today at Rainy Day Books in Fairway right after the program. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, we turn to a very different topic, the history of teaching evolution in our schools. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kim Noble, Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, and Maria Carter. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great Valentine's Day, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.